that was there to speak. But in verse 11, Job is responding to Eliphaz, and he's telling him that I don't have that strength, that hope that I had that was in, within me. I don't have that anymore. And he makes a comparison to the strength of stones and the strength of bronze. And the implication that Job is making is that I don't have that kind of strength in me. Because of all that has happened, I don't have that strength in me. And he says in verse 14, to him who is afflicted, kindness should be shown by his friend, even though he forsakes the fear of the Almighty. My brothers have dealt deceitfully like a brook, like the streams of the brooks that pass away, which are dark because of the ice, and into which the snow vanishes. When it is warm, they cease to flow. When it is hot, they vanish from their place. Their paths of their way turn aside. They go nowhere, and they perish. He's saying to Eliphaz that, you know, when everything was going good, you know, you were there for me. But now when I need you the most, I expected you to be there, and you're not there. That example that he gives in regards to that brook. You have, some people call it a wadi. I grew up remembering it being called a wadi. And you have these mountains, and then in the wintertime, those mountains gather snow and ice, and as that participation comes down, and it gathers into that brook, and there's a multitude of water there during the wintertime because it continually flows down. And he says that that's how you were when everything was going good. You were like that brook during the wintertime. But in the summertime, that brook dries up. And when we need to quench our thirst more than ever, we can't go to that brook anymore. And he says that this is what you have been to me. You have dealt deceitfully with me. I thought you were my friend. And the interesting thing about this part of the passage of this story is he talks about it soon after he talks about those things that he lacks in regards to strength, the stones and the brass. And there's a very strong implication that Job regarded friendship as being one of his strengths. And the mere fact that Eliphaz traveled some distance once he found out what happened lets him know that he really cares about this man and that he is coming there to be a comforter to him. But then, as we've looked at already, he's just continually beating upon him, you know.
And Job would expect that his friends, very close friends, would know the sort of person that he was, rather than come in and tell him the evil things he's done.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's going to address that with Eliphaz, and well, actually, he's going to address it with all of them. What Ms. Jackie said was that those friends should know the type of person that he is, that he was before all of this happened. And in fact, Eliphaz said not long after he started talking to him, that you have, you know, gone through this with other people. You have counseled other people, and now that it's upon you, it doesn't seem as though you're able to handle it. Well, it seems as though, I won't say it seems. It's evident that they knew about the righteousness of God, okay? Because the things that they mention about God and about the sovereignty of God, the supreme power and the authority of God, those things were not wrong, okay? They were absolutely right on point with what they were talking about when they were talking about the power of God, but there seems to be
thus far just with Eliphaz. And we're going to look at this with the rest of these guys that speak. But it seems to be within Eliphaz a correlation that he's trying to make between prosperity and righteousness. And he's saying that because you went through these things, Job, there's no way that you can be righteous. Okay? Because if you were, God would not allow you to go through these things. That's the mistake that Eliphaz has made. And then Job says to him that, you know, I've never asked you guys for anything. I never asked you to come to me and to help me with anything. And he says that, you know, if you say I'm wrong, show me where I'm wrong and I will be quiet. I will sit there and I will listen to you. Verse 24 in chapter 6. Teach me and I will hold my tongue. Cause me to understand wherein I have erred. How forceful are right words, but what does your arguing prove? How does this benefit me? You know, you're here to comfort me knowing everything that I've gone through, and yet you've done nothing thus far but kick me while I'm already down. You know, what has he said to build him up? Can't find anything. Well, the intention of these three men were to get Job to admit to being sinful and to admit that he needs to repent. Okay? I don't believe that the scriptures suggest that they felt as though, you know, I just have to find something to say. Because it speaks to the contrary, because they continually talked about God and about how God will help you through this if only you would repent.
Maybe this is how they believe that the kind. This was that kind that didn't know about God.
They knew about God.
I mean, they didn't know about God not doing it. Because remember, these are the days when they used to say an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth and stuff like that. You know, they didn't know about it. This is how they thought.
We're gonna touch on that in the next two chapters. Okay? Now, Job understood that his friend Eliphaz was somebody that knew who he was before all of this happened. And he said, because you think I'm wrong, I want you. I'm going to trust you. Okay, remember what Eliphaz told him. He said, you know, we've already discussed this. We've already figured out what happened, why it happened, and what you need to do. You don't even need to worry about it. Just do what we tell you. And then he says, if you can show me where I have been wrong, where I have went against God in such a way that he will do this thing to me, I will hold my tongue and I will let you tell me. Okay? Then he says that, look me in my eyes. Look in verse number 28. He says, therefore be pleased to look at me, for I would never lie to your face. Yield now. Let there be no injustice. Yes, concede my righteousness still stands. Job says, my friend, look me in my eyes and understand that I'm the same person that you have known before this happened. All that I've been through, everything that I've said thus far, you cannot charge me with being unrighteous. That's what he says. Okay, now he says some things in regards to questioning God and making accusations against God that is wrong, absolutely. But he says that I have not sinned against God. And remember now, this is going back to that initial conversation that took place between Satan and God, in which Satan said what? He'll curse you to your face. Okay? Did Job know what had taken place in regards to that conversation?
No.
No, he didn't. Okay? So it's a very profound statement by Job to say that my righteousness still stands. I have not done what not only you think, you know, Eliphaz, my friend, you think I've done, but look me in my eyes. And what happens when you look a person in the eye? You know? Yeah. You know, I mean, it's. I remember going on my very first job interview, and one of the pieces of advice that was given to me was look that interviewer right in the eye. You know. And he's saying, look me in my eye, and can you honestly say that I have been unrighteous? Okay. Now, he says that this time on earth in chapter 7 is hard for a man. It's hard service. He says, are not the days also like the days of a hired man, like a servant who earnestly desires the shade, and like a hired man who eagerly looks for his wages? So I have been allotted months of futility, and wearisome nights have been appointed to me. When I lie down, I say, when shall I arise and the night be ended? For I have had my fill of tossing till dawn. Can you imagine what he's going through? Here he is. He can't sleep at night. He's tossing and turning. He's saying, you know, I can't wait until day comes because I don't want to go to sleep. You know? And I'm very careful in using my imaginations and things concerning the scriptures. And I'm very careful in asking others to use their imagination. But in this case, I feel comfortable asking that you think about what he could be going through in the middle of the night. What is it that he could be possibly thinking about that's not allowing him to sleep? We know he didn't witness the death of his children. But what are some of the things that could be keeping him up at night? He's in pain. What kind of pain? He's in physical pain. Yes, he's in spiritual pain. Thinks God has deserted him. Okay, there are some evidences that he believes that at times. He kind of bounces back and forth. You know, he kind of gets on his friend, and then he kind of turns on God in the way of accusations. Okay, 1, 2, 3, hold on. It's not God. No, it's not God. You mean, does Job think that? Okay. Job is responding directly to Eliphaz now, but then he turns, for lack of a better word, an attack on God in verse 11. He begins to talk about, you know, how he's not going to restrain. And then when he gets down to verse, I believe it's verse 12, is when he begins to talk directly to God, okay? But now he's talking directly to Eliphaz, and we're going to get into that. We're going to touch on that. Go ahead. That's where we're going next, yeah. Yes.
I can't remember.
If God's targeting him later on in that chapter, it's like, why have you set me as your target? So he is going through some doubts a bit in his mind.
He's going through it. And then, you know, one of the things that comes to my mind in regards to this, you know, these wearisome nights is, you know, you think about everything that he's lost. And you think about how valuable our relationships are with our spouses and with our children. You know, undoubtedly, this man had to have some thought, at least in my mind, of his children being born. Seeing them walk for the first time, seeing them grow up, you know, meeting his wife. Because remember, his wife told him to do what?
Curse God
and die. So he's lost the support of his wife. which is terrible in itself. And now he's lost his children, he's lost his servants, and the scriptures tell us that he was a man that was very loyal to his servants. You know, he didn't make their work hard in the sense of being a tyrant and just beating upon them, you know, as though this is what you have to do, this is what you're going to do. Okay? So this man is going through a lot mentally as well as physically, and now he's dependent upon his friends. We've only looked at one person, and this is the milder of the three. Okay? I mean, we're going to look into some things, and it just blows my mind at some of the things that they say to a man that is going through these things. But now, let's go on and look at some things that describe his physical condition. He says that he has been allotted these things for months. Okay? This has been over a long period of time that he's going through these things. His flesh is caked with worms and dust. His skin is cracked and it breaks out afresh. My days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle and are spent without hope. Oh, remember that my life is a breath. My eye will never see good again. Okay? What does James say about life? It's but a vapor. He says that his life is brief. He understands God. He understands that life is precious. Okay? There's no doubt in his mind as to who is in charge. But yet, he still can't escape the fact that this is a time in which he really doesn't have an answer. He's confused. He's on a roller coaster of emotions, and you can see it almost passage by passage. You know, you think at some point that he seems to understand that God is in charge and he's going to deliver me, but yet he turns right around and he starts pointing the finger at God and saying, you did this to me. Okay?
He's a miserable person. I loathe my life. Mm-hmm.
He's in a lot of pain, but he does understand how precious life is. And I don't know if you remember, we looked at Jeremiah. Jeremiah was in a similar state of mind, but neither one of those men took for granted the preciousness of life that came from God. Now, one thing, turn to Romans chapter 15 real quick. Romans chapter 15. I want us to look at our responsibility today in regards to what we should be doing when we find a lot of people within the fold that are hurting. You just think about that family prayer and how many people that we learn about that are going through difficulties. And we don't want to be like Eliphaz. We don't want to do this. We don't want to come and continually just point the finger and say, you know, this is what happened. This is what's going on. We want to be more like this. You know, how can I help? What is it that you need from me? But Eliphaz, you know, he went from this. Well, he never went here. He was always like this. Okay, look in Romans chapter 15, verse 1. We then who are strong ought to bear with the scruples of the weak and not to please ourselves. Let each of us please his neighbor for his good, leading to edification. Does anybody have an old King James? What do you have instead of scruples?
Failings.
Okay. Another version has infirmities. Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, we have a responsibility, and it's clear as day here, that when we go and we are to be comforters, okay?
and we go for that purpose of comforting, God says, I want you to build up. I want you to lift up. You know, don't be over there and be accusatory and trying to figure out. You know, sometimes we can get over there and, well, quite frankly, just get a little nosy, you know. And we ask so many questions in regards to what happened instead of asking the important question. What do you need? What can I do? Is it so important that we find out everything that that person, the circumstances behind the pain that they're going through? No. Yes. Absolutely. Very good point. Turn to Galatians chapter 6. Galatians chapter 6, and then we're going to jump back over in Job. Galatians chapter 6. Excuse me. Verse 1. Brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. Eliphaz did a good thing by coming to his friend. But that's where it ended. That's where it ended. You know, he was never there to build up. In his mind, building up meant tearing down and figuring out what, you know, his mistake was first off thinking he knew everything. We've already talked about this. We figured it out, Job. There's no reason for you to even say anything because we've talked about this. Okay? Now go back. Let's go back to Job and see how he finishes up in regards to Eliphaz. He says in verse 11, I will not restrain my mouth. I will speak in the anguish of my spirit. I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. And then he turns to God and he asks God, am I a sea or a sea serpent that you set a guard over me? When I say my bed will comfort me, my couch will ease my complaint, then you scare me with dreams and terrify me with visions so that my soul chooses strangling and death rather than my body. I loathe my life. I would not live forever. Leave me alone, for my days are but a breath. Verse 19, how long will you not look away from me and leave me alone till I swallow my saliva? He's in so much pain that all he wants is this much relief. Remember the rich man? Did he want a glass of water? The tip of his finger. That was it. You know? I can remember after my first surgery, I was in so much pain, and the doctor was there with me, and I asked him, what can you do to relieve the pain? And he jokingly said, well, I take the nerve out. I say, do it. He says, well, if I take the nerve out, then you won't be able to walk. I say, do it. I was very serious. And it's that kind of pain that can get us to thinking irrational. You know, Job was not thinking like a rational man. I was not thinking at that time like a rational person. Okay?
You didn't even consider it.
I didn't even consider the consequences behind the things that I've said. All I can think about is I'll do whatever it takes to just give me 5 minutes of relief.
Instead of get me another doctor.
Okay. But here's Job, and he's of that same mindset. All he wants to do is to get some relief. In verse 20, he says, have I sinned? What have I done to you, O watcher of men? Why have you set me as your target so that I am a burden to myself? Why then do you not pardon my transgression? Who's that sound like talking? Sounds like Eliphaz. Eliphaz said, you know, it's because of the things that you've done, it's because of the way that you've lived that you're in the situation that you're in. Okay? And now some of that has crept into the thinking of Job. Because in the beginning, Job did not think that way. That's right, yeah. You start questioning, you know. And that's why God is very emphatic when he says that we are to build one another up. We need to, when we go to visit someone, whether it be for some sickness or a death in the family or whatever it is, we need to be aware of the purpose of our visit, and we need to be prepared when we go. You know, just showing up at the door and questioning a person about, well, what happened? Anything wrong with that? No. But when you start drilling a person, and I know I'm not talking to anybody in here, but I got to say it anyway. When you start drilling a person, sooner or later, it's going to go from being a visit of comfort to a visit of accusation. And that's what happened here with Eliphaz, because he thought for sure that what he was saying was right. But here's Job saying that you have not only deceived me into thinking that you were my friend, you have deceived me in the time that I've needed you the most. I thought you were here to help me. Okay? And then comes Bildad in chapter 8. Bildad says, how long will you speak these things and the words of your mouth be like a strong wind? Does God subvert judgment, or does the Almighty pervert justice? He's asking, does God misapply justice? Does God make a mistake? Job knew the answer to that was no, so did Bildad. Okay? But he asked the question anyway. And then he says in verse 4 something that really astounds me. If your sons have sinned against him, he has cast them away for their transgression. What a terrible thing to say to someone who's just lost 10 children. You think it's important to know the purpose of our visit when we go and talk with somebody?
With Jesus and the blind man, he said, what can I do for you?
Mm-hmm.
What can I do for you?
Mm-hmm.
And you tell me that I do.
Yes, absolutely. You know, that's one of those lessons within these writings that I can't impress upon you enough. If you don't take anything else from this, because we're going to have opportunity to go and talk with people that have been hurting, that are very near and dear to us. You know? We're gonna have brothers and sisters that get sick, Jerry Hopkins. Okay, we're gonna have deaths in the family. We're gonna have trials and tribulations, and we're gonna have these people that they're gonna look to us as sources of edification. And we do not want to be an Eliphaz or a Bildad or a Zophar. Let's finish off what he says. Verse 6. He says that you were not pure, nor was he upright. If you were pure and upright, surely now he, God, would wake you from awake for you and prosper your rightful dwelling place. There he is again, suggesting, as his friend Eliphaz says, that it's his fault. Okay? And they're saying, and both of them are trying to equate this thing of prosperity and righteousness. The more you have, the more righteous you must be. Okay? And you think about that in today's society. That's the attitude of a lot of people. You know?
That's the opposite of the truth most of the time.
Yeah. A great majority of the time it's the opposite of the truth. You know, the show Apprentice with Donald Trump teaches them a lot of things about business. But all business is not cutthroat. You know, businesses are there to turn a profit, but not to the point that you're willing to sacrifice lives. Okay?
And righteousness does not automatically equal prosperity and vice versa. Now, Bildad calls him a hypocrite in verse number 13. You're not the man that I thought you were. You're somebody different. And then he says in verse 20, behold, God will not cast away the blameless, nor will he uphold the evildoers. He will yet fill your mouth with laughter and your lips with rejoicing. If you were the man that I thought you were, if you were the man that you claim to be, then you wouldn't be doing anything but laughing right now. Okay? That's what he's saying. You would be laughing. This would not be an issue for you. And then Job responds by saying, truly I know this, but how can a man be righteous before God? If one wished to contend with him, he could not answer him one time out of 1,000. Job says to him that I know exactly what you're saying. You're not making some great revelation, Bildad. I know this. You know this. And then he goes on and he tells about, the next 5 or 6 verses about how God is able to do it. He talks about the sovereignty of God. And then verse 10, he says that God does great things past finding out. Yes, wonders without number. And he says, I can't stand up to God and demand God give me an answer. You think he wants to know what's going on? Absolutely. But he's telling Bildad that I can't just go and stand before God and say to God, I want an answer. And that's what Bildad is suggesting. Look in verse 14. He says, how then can I answer him and choose my words to reason with him? For though I were righteous, I could not answer him. I would beg mercy of my judge. If I called and he answered me, I would not believe that he was listening to my voice. There's some of those thoughts again that are creeping in with Eliphaz. Okay? Job was a righteous man. That's why he was chosen by God to be up for this task. He just didn't arbitrarily pick somebody out. He says to God, to Satan, by name, I have a servant who is blameless and upright, and he's up for the job. His name is Job. And he only gave him 2 conditions. The first one was what? Not to touch him. Okay? Then God allowed him to touch him. Then what was it? Not to kill him. Okay? So he's gone through all of these things. And then he says to Eliphaz, everything that I've gone through, I'm still righteous. Then he says to Bildad, I understand everything you just told me about God and about his power. But I want you to understand something, Bildad. Look what he says in verse 22. That it's all one thing. Therefore, I say he destroys the blameless and the wicked. What does that sound like? It sounds like what? About the rain. It rains on who? There's a big difference in those two passages. There's a big difference. What Job says is that God destroys. Okay? What Jesus was saying is that there is no partiality in relationship to God, that good people and bad people, they all suffer. Okay? But what Job says is that God destroys the blameless and the wicked, and he says that he laughs at the plight of the innocent. 100% wrong, Job. He says that the earth is given into the hand of the wicked. He covers the faces of his judges. And then he goes down, and we're going to jump down to, let's go back up to verse 19. When he says, if it is a matter of strength, indeed he is strong, and if of justice, who will appoint my day in court? Who does Job want to take to court? He wants to take God to court and have God do what? Give him an answer why he's going through these things. But you see how irrational that is? Because he just said that he wouldn't be able to answer God one time out of 1,000. even if God says something to him. You know, he's in so much pain that he just can't think straight. Yes. Yeah, Satan. Satan gets a free ride. Yeah, Satan gets a free ride. Absolutely. Yeah, Job has no idea the things that have transpired as a result of these things that he's going through. He has no idea what took place, should I say? Okay, all he knows is these things have happened. And remember, when these things first happened. Okay, he mourned, but he worshiped God. The Bible says that he fell down and he worshiped God. He didn't begin thinking like this until those friends started to come. Okay, that's when things began to change for him. And then he says in verse 27, if I say I will forget my complaint, I will put off my sad face and wear a smile. There again, it sounds like he's figured out what he needed to do. But then he turns around and says, I'm afraid of all my sufferings. I know that you will not hold me innocent. If I am condemned, why then do I labor in vain? There is no way that we can labor in vain when we labor for Christ. No way. Job made this statement in a very depressed state. But it doesn't excuse him from making such a statement. Just like it doesn't excuse us when we go through difficulties in life and we decide that we're going to not so much depend on God, but we're going to fix it ourselves, and we begin to say things and do things that we know are wrong, and then we turn around and say, well, you need to understand. You know, I'm going through a rough time right now. There's still no excuse for it. Because God says that he that endures, he that is faithful until death shall receive that crown of life. Now, verse 33. Job says, there is no mediator between us who may lay hold on his hand, who may lay his hand on us both. Let him take his rod away from me, and do not let dread of him terrify me. Then I would speak and not fear him, but it is not with me. Job is looking for somebody between he and God. I mean, he's desperately seeking. He's saying, if I had that person in the middle to speak to God and to speak to me and be able to understand the things that I'm going through, he says, I'd be able to handle this a whole lot better. Okay? I'd be able to. And we have today the mediator. We have Christ. We have what Job really and truly and honestly wanted, desperately. And what does man do with Jesus today? What does he do with the mediator today? Nothing. They belittle Jesus. They speak against Jesus in regards to his deity. They mock him. We're talking about today's society. But here's Job saying, I wish I had what you guys had. Okay? I wish that I had somebody that was able to understand the things that I've gone through, the things that I have been going through for months now. He says, I'll be able to handle it a little bit better. And then he begins to plead with God in chapter 10. He says that my soul loathes my life. I will give free course to my complaint. I will speak in the bitterness of my soul. I will say to God, do not condemn me.
Show me why you contend with me. Does it seem good to you that you should oppress, that you should despise the work of your hands and smile on the counsel of the wicked? Irrational thinking again. Verse 7. Although you know that I am not wicked and there is no one who can deliver me from your hand. Your hands have made me and fashioned me an intricate unity, yet you would destroy me. Wrong again, Job. Verse 12. You granted me life and favor, and your care has preserved my spirit. Job seems to think at this point that God has fashioned him, has made him, and yet, early he said, I've done all this work for God for nothing. Then he says here, what? Same thing. He seems to be thinking that you know, God, you should be there to protect me. I've lost everything. I've lost my wife, the support of my wife. I've definitely lost the support of my friends. And he's saying that, God, you should be there to help me because you're the one that made me. Go to verse 20. Are not my days few? Cease, leave me alone that I may take a little comfort. Before I go to a place from which I shall not return, to the land of darkness and the shadow of death, a land as darkness itself, as the shadow of death without any order, where even the light is like darkness. Go ahead. Well, he says, you know, because you have made me and you have fashioned me so that you know everything about me. He says in intricate unity, you know everything about me. You know how I think, you know how things, you know, how I react to things. Yet you would destroy me, you know, and that is him believing that God should not be in the business of destruction, if I can phrase it that way. Because with him saying that, okay, let's go down to verse 9. Remember, I pray, that you have made me like clay, okay? And you would turn me into dust again. Did you not pour me out like milk and curdle me like cheese, clothe me with skin and flesh and knit me together with bones and sinews? So he understands. That's two. Okay, we're going to pick up next week with Zophar. And if you want to read it, it's some very interesting reading. And I can tell you that Zophar is even more shocking with what he has to say than Eliphaz and Bildad. Thank you for your attention.